One Palestinian was kidnapped in Jerusalem during dawn invasion and home searches in the city. Elsewhere, Israeli soldiers carried out on Monday at dawn excessive military searches of Palestinian homes in Karyut village in the northern West Bank district of Nablus and kidnapped 8 Palestinians. In the Gaza Strip, the Israeli Air Force carried out on Monday at dawn 2 airstrikes targeting a training camp for the Al-Qassam Brigades, the arming of Hamas, and the Palestinian Naval Police in the besieged and impoverished Gaza Strip. The attacks caused excessive damage, but no casualties were reported. On Sunday evening, the Israeli radio said that a shell allegedly fired from Gaza detonated in an open area in the Sha'ar Negev Regional Council of Settlements, causing no damage or casualties. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, December 14th, 2015 news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi, Hammi, Ghassan Badnoura.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Steve Oster, Joanna Peterson, Robin Ryan, Ken Jones, and Chris Andre. The producer is Doug McVeigh. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so get a pen. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kate Brown's number is 503-378-3111. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Joanna Peterson. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris ask, should the state government sell off Elliott State Forest? Their guest is Aaron Robertson of Oregon Wild. At 9, on alternative radio, social and political critic Henry Giroux speaks on the cost of neoliberalism. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, DeMay Roberts hosts Stage and Audio, a weekly live show featuring the best of performing, literary, and media arts in Portland and beyond. And at 11:30, Andre Middleton hosts Art Focus, interview artists, curators, critics, and other art people. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support to keep KBOO strong. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
And stay tuned now for an in-depth report from the Real News Network on Israel and Turkey and oil being smuggled by Daesh. Good night, Joanna.
Good night, Ken.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Welcome to the Real News Network. I'm Paul Jay. 30,000 barrels of oil a day, $19 million a month. That's apparently the revenues that are flowing to the Islamic State. It's oil exports flowing through Turkey, and now an investigative report accuses Israel of being one of the principal middlemen for Islamic State oil. Now joining us to talk about how all this works and how it can work, given supposedly the bombing campaigns that are going on, is Vijay Prashad. Vijay joins us from Northampton, Massachusetts. He's the George and Martha Kellner Chair in South Asian History, Professor of International Studies at Trinity College. His latest book is Letters to Palestine, Writers Respond to War and Occupation. Thanks for joining us again, Vijay.
Pleasure.
So first of all, what do we know about how the oil gets out? It seems a little bizarre to me that such industrial-scale exports can take place without all the various countries that are supposedly attacking IS being able to stop this.
Well, first, I should say that there are a number of reports and studies that have been conducted. The Financial Times has done some reporting. Al Arabi Al Jadid has done a major study on the, I think, 26th of November, which they called Raqqa's Rockefeller. The Russian government has released their own paper on what they claim is going on between the ISIS territory, Turkey, and Israel. I did a report called ISIS Oil. So there's a number of people who've been looking at the phenomena of ISIS oil and how it's both being taken out of the ground and where it's going, how ISIS is able to make money. The story is rooted actually in phenomena that predate ISIS. In other words, there are oil fields in northern Iraq, in the Kurdish autonomous region, where for many years the Iraqi regional government of Kurdistan has been in some kind of competition with the government in Baghdad, the central government. And oil has been siphoned out of these northern fields, these Kurdish fields, onto big trucks, smuggled into Turkey, and then they've gone out through Ceyhan port, through Malta, often to Israel. So this is a rather old network that has at least been going for 15 years or so. When ISIS took control of these fields about 18 months ago, they simply used the same networks, smuggling networks. They organized it. They've created in Mosul an institution called Office of Resources, which controls things that are as far afield as oil smuggling to soft drink distribution. You know, they do a variety of things, this Office of Resources. As far as the oil is concerned, they've, as I said, utilized the old smuggling rings that had been used by the Kurdish regional government so that oil travels across the border into Turkey. There is some preliminary refining that happens because Turkey, at least in this respect, seems to be rather particular that you can only bring crude oil into Turkey if you have a license from the Iraqi government. If the oil is partly refined, then it can cross without that license. So there's crude refining of the oil, bribes are paid at the border, and the trucks cross over and dispatch their crudely refined oil onto trucks of another smuggling network. So the first set of trucks will return essentially to Mosul and to the oil fields in Iraq and some of them in Deir ez-Zor in eastern Syria. Inside Turkey, the Al Arabi Al Jadid report skims this over, but here the story is quite fascinating. Because, you know, yes, indeed, Al Arabi Al Jadid shows that there is a influential middleman. They call him Uncle Farid, Farid Haj. You know, he has various names, who at least takes charge of some of the trucking networks. But once the oil comes into mainstream Turkey, particularly in the three ports, one of which is Ceyhan port, which is run by the Turkish government, there is a mysterious company called BMZ. Which takes control. And it turns out that BMZ has a familiar name as one of its owners. And that's the third child of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. His name is Bilal Erdogan. And Bilal Erdogan is one of the owners of BMZ. BMZ recently bought two major oil tankers. You know, why would they be buying oil tankers unless the flow of oil had increased in recent months? And they, through Ceyhan, take the oil out to Malta, where it is again transshipped, put onto a different ship, and it goes to Israel, from where it is either consumed in Israel or it's laundered and sold out to European markets. So that's basically how the oil flows. What we don't quite know yet, and I think what requires some investigation, is how the finance works, you know, how the payments are taking place, the banking networks that are involved, etc. But most of the money, as far as the Islamic State is concerned, you know, up to the border with Turkey, is done in cash. So there, the question of banks don't apply. Now, so that's essentially how the oil travels.
In the Al-Arabi piece, they quote an oil official, a European oil industry official, who says that without Israel, IS wouldn't be able to send its oil to Europe, that Israel's playing a critical link in the exports of IS oil. And then if that's true, it means Israel's playing a critical link in funding IS.
Well, you see, again, this goes back to the networks that predate the Islamic State or ISIS. Israel has indeed played a role recycling or laundering oil from illegal oil that has come out of the Kurdish regional government for, you know, 10, 15 years. I mean, that is how Erbil, the northern capital, has been able to get revenues by itself. And that has been one of the real reasons for tension between the Kurds in the north in Erbil and the government in Baghdad. So Israel has indeed been laundering illegal oil from northern Iraq. They seem to not care. They are agnostic, it seems to me, whether that oil is being sold to them by the Kurdish regional government, which is pro-American, or by ISIS, which apparently America is against. In either case, the Israelis seem quite happy to launder that oil and provide, therefore, the group, whether it's ISIS or the Kurdish government, finances. So yes, it is absolutely true that the relationship between Malta and Israel is of the essence here. Malta and Israel are joint partners in exploring for oil fields. Some of this is contested with the government of Lebanon because their waterways are not ill-defined. You know, these are two countries still at war. So Malta is a partner with Israel in much of the oil dealings. And yes, it's perfectly reasonable to say that without Israel's laundering, ISIS oil would not be able to benefit ISIS.
Now, it's certainly if journalists can figure out these routes, the CIA must be able to figure out it. Obviously, you would think Israel's Mossad. I mean, this can't all be happening without everybody knowing. And if, in fact, they're trying to close down IS, you'd think they'd close down the primary source of their revenue. I mean, why wouldn't the Israeli state step in? It can't just be about the money they're making out of the oil.
Well, Jeremy Corbyn asked this very question during the parliamentary debate in the United Kingdom over whether to bomb Syria. He said, you know, what about the oil revenues? Why aren't we looking into that? This is what the Russians said when they provided their brief, saying Turkey is a party to the transshipment of oil from ISIS territory, and why aren't they stopping this? You know, at some level, you'd imagine that this is something that concerns deeply people in, you know, the White House, etc., perhaps the CIA, that they understand, they know that this is true, because much of this is open source reporting. You know, this isn't, these are not secret documents. This has not relied on, WikiLeaks type leaks coming from a government. This has, relied upon old-fashioned reporting where, for instance, disgruntled Kurdish oil ministry officials have talked openly with reporters about how they believe that in Kurdistan, the oil has been leaking across the border into Turkey. There are people inside Turkey who have talked quite openly, but I think with a great sense of trepidation, given the crackdown on press freedom, but they've talked quite openly about the role of various Turkish companies in the transshipment. And in the side of Malta, there have always been very leaky, corporate people there who speak openly about what's going on. I mean, what you have to understand is that there is a political series of contradictions involved here, and not merely whether the evidence is good or bad. Now, you know, the United States has a contradictory relationship with Turkey. They are unable to push Turkey to even close their border or to stop attacking the Kurdish militias, which the U.S. government say are one of the few forces capable of fighting IS on the ground. These are political contradictions. I think within these institutions, the U.S. government, perhaps the Israeli government, there is some debate going on about why they haven't responded to something that is so obvious as trucks driving through the Turkish landscape taking IS oil to Israel.
All right, thanks very much for joining us, Vijay.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on The Real News Network.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Hats for the Homeless donation drive. From now through December 15th, Fire on the Mountain on 57th and Northeast Fremont, Los Gorditos at 12th and Southeast Division, Mike's Drive-In in Selwood, The Cup and Saucer on Northeast Killingsworth, and the Old Salt Supper House on Northeast 42nd Avenue will collect clean, new, or gently used hats, scarves, and gloves, and the folks at Zippity News will distribute them to local shelters. Dropbox locations and more information can be found at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, you're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO Radio. For the working class, by the working class, and of the working class. We're here this evening. I'm Ann McDonald, and we're here with co-host Fernando Gappison, and we're going to talk this evening to Sarah Kovaleski and William Zeigler. They're seasonal Portland Parks and Recreation workers who are here to talk a little bit about their efforts to improve conditions for the casual workers at Portland Parks and Rec. Will and Sarah, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.